Welcome to Kansas City Real Talk, brought to you by KCRAR. I'm Alex Gehring, and I am here alone with Jeff Carson.
The Jeff Carson.
I am here alone with the Jeff Carson. Jeff, how are you today?
I'm good. I've been looking forward to this.
Oh, I'm so excited. So we're doing something a little bit different. We're just going to have a conversation. There might be a book bit. For all I know, you've read a book recently. I've been reading.
When you say read a book recently, what's your definition of recently? Does it exceed 20 years?
I read every morning.
Does it exceed 30 years maybe?
Have you not read a book in 30 years?
I read some sort of book that I had to for like a KAR leadership meeting. It was like a 35-page.
You didn't really read that.
No, my kids came over like, hey, Dad, pretty exciting, your second book.
Oh, my gosh.
They all teased me that the last book I read was Watership Down as a senior in high school.
What? So you're not really a reader, huh?
I'm not a well-read person. I have to be able to put it down and be done with it.
Yeah.
You know, if I have to go back to something, I lose interest or I forget, and then I lose interest.
Well, I mean, you can't tell.
And I was so nervous about this part because I know there's like Bobby's book bits, and I'm thinking I'm more like kibbles and bits, not instead
you're my,
of book
oh,
bits.
Kibbles.
You know, and I was so nervous. I spent like 20 minutes picking out my outfit today and everything else.
Wow. So no reading.
No reading.
Do you audiobooks?
No.
Podcasts?
Yeah.
Other than Real Talk?
No, honestly, Real Talk's probably the only one I do listen to.
No. So what do you do in the car? Do you just have – so what I – honestly
– it's alone with me time.
– yeah, and I get that. Usually for me, I am listening to a podcast or I'm almost never listening to music unless I'm with my girls, and then my girls will request stuff and I have to play what they request.
Yeah, a lot of time it's really not even music. It's just alone time. It's just – it's quiet time. I don't get quiet time, so maybe that's what I enjoy about it.
So I'm somebody who when I'm by myself, I'm usually working out problems and solving things in my head and having conversations in my head, you know, and trying to play out different scenarios and prepare for what might happen during the day. So usually if I'm silent in my car, it's because I've got a meeting that I've got to run or something like that. Because you've known me for a long time. You know I'm not going to prepare on paper for anything.
Right.
But if you give me like an hour beforehand, which might – 30 minutes, that might just be in the shower, me standing there silently thinking, I'll be fine. But so maybe that's what it is for you.
There's always so many things going on, whether it's personally, professionally. I'm always working. I feel like I'm working through something.
Yeah, exactly. So, Jeff, let's start with this.
Okay.
Let's start with this. How long have you been with KCRAR?
It was 13 years in December. I think technically I'm still a temp.
You're still a temp.
Yeah, I'm not even good at being a temp. They just never sent me home. I just never went home.
And I think that you are, if I'm not mistaken, I think you're the only staff person who sells real estate as well.
That's correct. So when we say staff, we really never say employee because I'm not an employee. I'm a contractor. So I'm not an employee of the association.
You're a contractor
of
the association.
I technically consider a consultant.
And I mean in our business, you know that I'm not actively selling anymore, right? But of course, I have people who are on staff who do sell, and those people are extremely valuable to me because they understand the field, right? They know what agents are feeling. I assume, and I want to hear a little bit from you on this, I assume that Kip gets to realize that same benefit through you and through your sales activity.
That I think that really kind of is a big part of my role is to provide the perspective of our members. And, you know, when you look around the office, we've got 30 people here and they might have sold their own personal home once or twice, that kind of thing, but they're not actively engaged in it. So a lot of the conversations that we have are centered around what our members are doing, and that's when I get brought in. Or if we're looking at making a change, how will this impact the members? How will this impact you, Jeff? And I always say, I'm your average member. I'm not your top tier guy. I'm not, you know, your bottom tier part-timer, but, you know, I'm kind of right smack in the middle. And so I provide that perspective. And I think when Kip first started, I think he wondered, what am I going to do with this guy?
Yeah.
And then I think it kind of slowly evolved in that, you know, and he considers me a resource.
Well, I mean, he probably frequently still says, what am I going to do with this
guy?
I'm
sure
of
that.
But it is for different reasons.
I'm sure of that. And then we usually laugh about that.
So, Jeff, could you give us an example of a time when your field experience your field experience changed an outcome here at the association level, or maybe didn't change an outcome but helped inform an outcome at the association?
Boy, that's a tough one. I don't know that I can pinpoint something. I know that – you know, I don't know that I can – take one specific instance, but I know sometimes it just comes out in conversation. We'll start with a problem that's going on in the marketplace, and then it will suddenly pull out something that happened to me recently. And, you know, our business is something, and it's – I will have been licensed 35 years in July. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing that you still learn every day.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had transactions recently within the last couple of years that I wonder, how did I get here? How did I get in the middle of this problem? You've done this for too long. How did this happen? You sometimes you back into something and you're doing everything right, but then something else changes. And it's because of maybe somebody you're working with, and there may be a great agent. So you're letting your guard down a little bit with them, and then they themselves get into a pickle. But because we're all in this together, Now we've got a pickle together. And so I'm sorry I don't have a specific instance, but a lot of times when we're talking about things that our members are going through, then I can usually resurrect, you know what, that happened to me a few years
Absolutely.
Ago, and this is what I did.
Well, I think that's so important. And you bring up such a great point. It's every single deal that an agent is doing, you are learning something new.
Absolutely.
I mean, there isn't any question about it. And for people that aren't necessarily it's so hard to explain that. It sounds a little bit like a cop out to people who haven't experienced it, right? Because it is something new every single day. And so I think it can be difficult in my experience for people who have to make decisions that impact real estate professionals who maybe don't have that field experience where it is changing every day and you have to adapt every day. Every person is different. Every client is different. Every co-op is different. Every house is different. Right. Every day that you're looking at a house is different. It can differ because of weather conditions. Like you just don't know. If you don't have that that background, it can be really, really difficult. And I feel like I just think it's important that you're there. And I think that on top of everything that you do for advocacy, even if it's just coming out in conversation, is providing some level of context, I want to make sure that people understand how valuable it is that we have somebody who is in the field at the staff level, whether you want to call it staff or not, at the association. I think it's critical.
Well, I appreciate that. And I feel that I'm valued in that way. The staff members make me feel valued in that
Good.
Respect. And I hear from MLS, sometimes it's a tech question. Something will evolve out of a tech question that maybe is more about real estate license law or something like that. That's really not something that falls within the MLS realm, but it's come up, and then they need to ask me. They'll need to put them on hold and run over and ask me a question, you know, or something like that, or on a Teams message or something like that. So, but you know, it is changing all the time, and I think the longer you do it, the way you react to those challenges is different. I mean, I still have the same I back into a deal that I didn't know that was going on or something like that. But then how I react to it is different than how I would have 20 years ago or 30 years ago. 30 years ago, it was panic.
Yeah.
It was panic because I think the whole thing's going to blow up, and then I'm not going to get paid, and then I'm not going to be able to pay the light bill. You know, I go
Sure.
to the darkest places so quickly. Now it's like, okay, everybody settle down. What do we need to do to fix this?
Right.
And that's what – when people call me, because I get called a lot. My wife, she'll hear me on the phone with somebody about something. Sometimes it's just an agent-to-agent dispute, and somebody's calling and they're crying. I don't know why she said this about me, and I've never done anything, you know, bad and this and that. And I'm talking them off the ledge. And then I get off the phone and who is that? I tell them, why are they calling you
about
that?
That's Sarah too.
Why are they calling you about this? I go, I don't know. Maybe because they think that I can, you know, that I have the answer. She goes, well, what if you don't know the answer? Then they probably think that I know where to get the answer for
them.
Or
they just know that they can talk to you,
right,
and they need to talk. And,
right,
and when they – and they know that by the time they're done talking to you, even if you don't say a word – they will have talked it through,
right,
and they're going to come to it to a conclusion.
Yeah, sometimes just talking to them will get them to where they need it. And you know,
yes,
what? You and I have had those conversations.
Absolutely.
All the friends that we associate with in the association, we've all done that.
We all
know had those days
where
we just
are.
Had to unload.
That's right.
And we've had to vent.
Yeah.
And you've vented. I've vented at you.
And I feel like Patty and Sarah are probably similar in that Sarah doesn't want me to vent to her about,
yeah,
9/10 of the stuff that I'm dealing,
oh,
with.
Well, and most people that know me really well that are outside of real estate, they don't really want to hear about my bad day.
No.
If I have
of
a bad day,
not.
Because I was told one time by a really good friend, you know what? I don't want to hear it. You get to do what you love to do every,
yeah,
day with the people that you love to do it with. He says, you know what? The worst day on your job is the best day on my job. So, you know what? If today wasn't perfect for you, too bad.
And then there's truth to that.
Right.
As harsh as it sounds, we are – I do think that for those of us who do love this industry, because I do think that there are some people who are trapped in it. But for those of us who do love this industry, I mean, we love it.
Oh, absolutely.
It's – there isn't anything better.
I mean, there's
us.
The thrill of the hunt. There's the deal. But then there's the relationship part of it. And I think at my age, the relationship part is really something that I – cherish. I mean, I love the work, but sometimes the work is for me something that I have to do to form the relationships that I have formed. And after 35 years, most of my best friends are in real estate, and I'm sitting across a microphone looking at one right now. So, and you just never know where they're going to be.
But it's true. It's true. Yeah. When I graduated with an opera degree, I didn't have any idea. Where the majority of my friends would, mm-hmm, would come from. Okay, so that comes to something else. I know a little bit of this. So let me ask you, and you don't have to answer, but everybody's going to know that you refuse to answer the question. So, I mean, it is what it is. How old were you when you got your license?
Let's see. I was 25.
25. Tell,
yep,
us about the market.
You know, rates were 10%.
Hmm.
Of course, I didn't know any better. That's just,
right,
what it was.
Right.
And now what I find out now is we had just come out of 17, 18, 19, 20% interest rates. And,
yeah,
you know, I remember a friend of mine that I had worked with before I went off to college. I took a weird path to college. But I remember them getting bond money at like 13 or 14%, and they were afraid they wouldn't qualify for it.
Hmm.
And of course, to me, that's – car loans were 12.9. I mean – If you saw, you know, cars advertised at 11.5 or 10.9 interest rate, you just ran out to the car dealership and bought a new car because that was great. You know, the thought of 0.9 and things like that didn't exist. So, you know, and that's what I try to tell people now that are so panicked about the current state of the market with interest rates at 6.5 and those kinds of things, that, hey, that was great. I mean, nobody ever thought we'd see 6.5% interest rates. And we sold houses. You know, we sold houses at 10, we sold them at 9, we sold them at 8, you,
yeah,
know. And yes, the market exploded, but people aren't – I think the bad thing is people aren't – people haven't – some of our newer folks have not learned to sell a house. They know how to fill out paperwork. They know how to put a sign in the yard, but they've not learned how to sell a house.
It's, I mean, true.
And when
– because everything sells it for them.
Right. And,
yeah,
so when somebody calls me and said, Jeff, I've got this new listing. It's been on the market for 4 days. I don't have any offers. I'm kind of worried.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just want to say shut up about it. You know, I mean, I remember when I took one-year listings because it might take a year to sell,
right,
a house. I mean, lots of houses, you know, took forever to sell back then. And – it was nothing for somebody to look at a house on a weekend,
yeah,
and you'd call and say, how did it go? And or that, you know, if they were, you were working with them, you know what, I want my parents to come up from out of town, so they're going to be here next Sunday, so we're going to take another look at it. Okay. That wasn't a big deal because, you know what, we knew it'd be available.
Yeah.
There was none of this, well, okay, if it's still available,
it was
we knew it was.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
yeah, it's
it was hard to sell something in the first day because the word just wasn't going to get out that quickly.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay, doing some quick math, that would have been 89 or 90. Is that right?
I got my license in 89. Yeah.
In 89. So yeah. In 1989 to now, you've experienced a number of market corrections, mm-hmm. right? You've experienced the great financial crisis. You experienced multiple recessions before the great financial mm-hmm. crisis and at least one since then, right?
Yep.
So what do – and I know that this is the last thing that you wanted to hear when you said that you've been in the business for 35 years and when when I start talking about how long I've been in the business. Shoot me. But it's extremely valuable. It's important because, of course, we've got people who just got their license who might be 25 years old,
yep.
and they're experiencing it. It's a market that's difficult for completely different reasons, but a difficult market is a difficult market. What did you have – and you and I have talked quite a bit about this. What did you have to do during some of those – how did you get through those difficult markets and what were the lessons that you learned along the way?
Well, the first one happened probably in about 96 or 97, and I don't know if it was so much the market but maybe my personal business. I had a great December, close 10 or 12 deals, mm-hmm. had a little straggler that went over into January. And I had done some new homes at the time, so I was doing new and resale. So 10 or 12 homes back then, that was a lot. But remember, I was selling those houses back in March and April and May. And
sure.
They were just getting done. Had a little straggler. I didn't write another offer until the third week of May. Did not write an offer on anything. Mm-hmm. So every month I'm going to the bank, transferring money and that kind of thing. And young family, I just had the one child at the time, 2.5 years old. And I got to thinking, maybe there's a limit. Mm-hmm. Maybe I bagged my limit and you only get to sell so many and I'm done and nobody told me. And so I was big on plan B and then plan C.
Yeah.
We had a relatively new home, but I thought, okay, I had a lot of equity in that home because of the way we built it. And I thought, okay, I could sell that. I could buy this. I'm out looking at lesser priced homes and thinking about what is my plan and what am I going to do if I can't figure this out? My wife didn't work, outside the home. And so I think what came out of it early on in my career, so that was 7 years into it, six and a half, seven years into it, more conservative nature, not that we were ever not conservative, but even more so. I mean,
yeah.
I just, I was always told you'll lose the value of money when you
yes.
get into real estate because you get these big checks.
And you see people you
think,
do that.
And you think, gosh, I could just run right out and go buy a new car and pay cash for it, or I could
yep.
go put all new furniture in my house or whatever it might be.
With no mind of what the next year might
right,
hold
for or
you.
The next month
right.
might hold. And I think that's what's led today to us, driving a 7-year-old SUV and a mm-hmm. An 18-year-old minivan.
Yeah.
It's just like these are fine.
Right.
Yes, we could certainly buy better, but these are fine.
And I think that's always correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it is such a stereotype that it must be something that's been a long time building, right? But I think we've had a long period of time where the idea of an agent is that they just have they've got the BMW, they got the big house, they've got the Rolex, they've got all these different things that they really can't afford.
And I'm interrupting you because it's so funny to hear you say those things, because back in my day when I first started, it was big hair, big Cadillacs, and now you're onto Rolexes and BMWs. It's so funny to hear your perspective, because mine was big hair, because all the ladies had big hair. They did glamour shots, drove lipstick red Cadillacs and, those kinds of things. But, I would just tell people to be more conservative about it. During the recession back in 8, 9, 10, when it was really kind of at its peak, I was waited on by an agent.
Yeah.
And it was an agent I had co-op with, within a couple of years. And she walked up to our table and she looked and she said, "Oh my gosh." And I said, "Well, hey, how are you?" And we started chatting. She goes, "Oh, I'm just so embarrassed." And I said, "Why are you embarrassed?" She goes, "I just, Jeff, the market's been so bad. I had to get a job and this and that." And she goes, I'm just embarrassed that I'm having to take your order." And I said, "Please do not be embarrassed to pay your bills.
That's
what?
Right.
we need to do what we need to do. I'm even getting a little choked up talking about it. But I said, do not be embarrassed to pay your bills. I said, this was right after I started working at KCRER. And I said, I'm over at KCRER, doing some things that I need to do to make ends meet mm-hmm. until the market turns back around. So please, you know what? And of course, you know, I told Patty, while we don't have the money to leave a big tip, I'm leaving a really big tip.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because, you know, she's out doing what she needed to do to take care of her family. And, you know, everybody always said when the market turns, well, good, we'll get rid of all the bottom feeders.
Yeah.
You know what? We don't lose part-time agents.
And that's
the people
right.
We lose that middle-of-the-road folks yep. that are really hitting their stride, and those are the ones that we want to keep
exactly.
in our business. And unfortunately, those are the ones we lose.
Those are the people we lose. And Bobby and I have talked about this on a recent episode. The people that we lose are the people that need this.
Yes.
And those are the people that we need to keep.
And they weren't in it long enough to get that financial portion solidified.
Right.
And that's it's unfortunate because –
I think
it just is.
One of the things, and yeah, and you hit it already, what I admire, you have a successful career. People look up to you from a leadership perspective at the association level. I'm one of those people. You have successful investments, right? You've done very, very well. And yet you live in this in a way that it doesn't. I think you live your life in a way that I want to live mine, I think is what and the way that I try to be, right?
Don't
I try
make me
not
cry on this
but
now.
It's true. I do my best to make sure and I coach my agents this way too. When you receive those paychecks, they are not a paycheck. Your business made that money.
Right.
You're a small business.
Right. Exactly.
Your business made that money. You're paying yourself. That isn't your money. It can be your mm-hmm. money. You can make it your money, but you need to be making that decision that you, as a business owner, are going to pay 100% of the profit of your company to its only employee. You're making that decision.
Right.
And I don't think people think about it that way. They pay themselves 100% of their paycheck, and they go out and they blow it on stupid stuff.
Sure.
And it's not everybody, but we see it. And I mean, I fell victim to that in my – and I've talked about it quite a bit on here. I fell victim to that in my first couple of years.
Well, it's easy to do.
Very
and you know
easy.
What? As long as you make the corrections, it's okay to treat yourself and things like that.
Oh, totally.
And you are somebody that I admire very much also because you are very much into mentoring people and helping people. And I appreciate the compliments that you gave to me. But you're very much the same way. I mean, there's a little bit of an age difference, of course, between us. But you are doing the same things that I'm doing. I mean, you're there to help anybody, whether they work for your firm or not. If somebody calls Alex with a problem, you're going to spend that time with them. And when you say those things about me, they're right back at you.
Well, I think it's important that people have those relationships in this business too,
absolutely.
Where you see the people who have been through a few things, right? And you see the lessons that they learned along the way, and it helps the rest of us learn them quicker if we're paying attention.
Yeah.
I do think that in today's environment with social media, those aren't the stories that are told as well as they should be. They see the BMW.
Right.
Right. They see those stories. They see the success. They see all of that. It's like that super passe thing about the duck, how he looks calm on the water,
yeah.
but he's paddling like crazy.
Yeah.
I got so tired of hearing that. But it is true. Now we see the BMW, but we never see the people who, have good, healthy habits, who take care of their family, who are focused on their relationships, and that's what's most important to them versus the image that they can put out there on social media.
And that's very true. You look at my things online, and it's silly. Usually, it's I'm out with you all.
Yeah,
I'm out
true.
With members. It's me with my kids and my wife, and every once in a while there's a vacation zone in there and things like that. But we're not real flashy people,
right?
And part of it I think has always been this business, it can turn on a dime. Yes. And I've always felt like if I was out there and showing off, mm-hmm. that the minute the market smacked me down,
people think everybody, you don't need it.
And everybody's going to really enjoy that moment because, right. you know, here it is. And you know, even when we first started off and we had a new house and some things like that, you know, a couple people made just off-the-cuff remarks, you know, and it bothered me because, you know, we weren't trying to be that. And then I would even ask, you know, I would ask Patty, am I projecting some sort of image out there that I'm better than everybody else, or you know, this money bags kind of thing? But I don't have any money. At least I don't think so. Right. I certainly don't have a bag of money anywhere. And no, it's just they're having a hard time. So they, you know, it seems like everything's going your way right now. And when it's not going their way, it's just a natural thing. And you just need to let that go, and it'll come back around. You know, they're friends, and you know, they'll continue to be friends, and it does.
I'll never forget it, and I'll. This is pretty personal, but it's okay. I don't think I'm sharing more than I should. But when we so I got started at 22. I got my license at 22, and then I turned 23 shortly thereafter, and it wasn't too long after that I advertised my first $1 million month, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a, oh my gosh, you know, you post that. And you put that kind of stuff out there and the world sees it. And we all understand that, right. People don't really know what that means, right? And I just came out of a degree program and an industry that I was still actively involved in at the time, right? Where people – it takes a long time for people to have any kind of a career,
sure.
in music,
yeah.
to have any kind of a career in opera. And after posting that, I went to a wedding, some friends of Sarah and I's, and everybody there was great. And it was, I mean, you know how weddings are when you're selling, especially when you're building up your career.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm working that room, you know? And I did after a couple of those things closed, you know, I'm like, I gotta get some new clothes real quick, you know?
Yeah.
And so I bought a blazer that at the time seemed expensive. It was probably a $300 blazer, you know?
That's still expensive to me.
Yeah, right.
even today, to me, that's
right.
expensive.
And I'm not trying to say that, but at the time, $300, I was a substitute teacher at best until I started, you know, like I didn't know what in the world I was going to do with my life. And as an opera singer, I was making, you couldn't even dream of spending $300
right.
on anything, you
right.
know, just wasn't going to happen. And so, and the, one of the wait staff there was so it's kind of like your story from before, was getting his doctorate at KU and was actively pursuing a performance degree. And he and I were friends, you know. I had seen him pretty regularly, both in performance but also at school, and we had built a really strong relationship or you know, so I thought. And he was extremely standoffish toward me. And so I talked to him, and I'm like, what's going on, man? And he goes, oh, I mean, we made $1 million last month. And I'm like, I'm sitting there thinking, surely you're not that like
naive, right?
That you think that I made $1 million
in
last month. And he goes, well, maybe you didn't, but you did well. And I'm sitting there thinking, you don't know anything about it. And he pointed out that sport coat.
Mm-hmm.
He pointed out that, and Sarah was right there. And so immediately I'm sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, you know. Now, one of the things to note is that, I love this about our business because I truly think it's real. We, people have this vision of real estate professionals as these cutthroat, extreme people, and those people are out there.
Of course,
don't
yeah.
get me wrong,
yeah.
but you know they've got the selling sunset vision in their mind of just stabbing people in the back. It is the opposite of what we experience, unfortunately. And again, I hesitate to say this, but I do think that unfortunately it can be true. The performance world is way more cutthroat like that. And it's because it is more of a zero-sum game.
That's
true. You go walk into an audition and there's one person that's going to get that role.
Right.
And there are 20 other people who aren't going to get it. And I think I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get at is I feel like I upgraded a little bit of my communities. There are things that I love about artistic people and that I love about performers, right? Mm-hmm. Realtors, in my experience, have been much more excited for other people's success because I think that the people that make it do not live in a world of scarcity.
That's true. And, you know, and that's very true because you look at people in our business, and not everybody's that way, but people are genuinely happy when you get a great listing or, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I post a lot of, you know, good for you or atta boy yes. or atta girl, you know, kind of thing. Go get them because, yeah, you know. And but, you know, we were talking about egos at a meeting one time just recently, and I said, you know, you have to have an ego to be in this business, even if it's a small ego. You know, if you go in on a listing appointment and you're being interviewed and you're up against a couple of other people and you don't get it, mm-hmm. there's a little bit of a sting. You know,
yes.
I lost a client last week, 2 weeks ago. It hurt. I mean, it was just one of those things, and I couldn't get it out of my head. And I kept thinking, what did I do wrong? And, you know, all these kinds of things. But, you know, you do have to have a little bit of an ego to succeed in
you
this.
Do.
And, you know, sometimes I think, well, if I'm going in, okay, I don't mind losing out on a listing, but please pick somebody better.
Yeah.
You know what? Pick Alex Gearing. Pick Bobby Howe. Then I don't feel so bad. But every once in a while, they'll pick someone. I'm like, really? And then I feel bad because I say that, but, and I don't say it out loud. Or like, oh, they picked so-and-so.
Yeah,
but that stings too. That stings too.
But I get it. But you're right. I mean, you have to have a strong sense of self because you have to get over that kind of a thing very quickly.
You do. You got to get right back up.
You're never going to forget
it. You got to get back on the horse.
You're
going to
learn from
it.
But you have to get up and you have to deal with that. And that's something that performers definitely have in common with people in this profession is, like I say, you don't get an audition. You don't get the role. You'd better audition tomorrow.
Right.
You better find something else to audition for.
And this is a foreign concept to me because I have no talent whatsoever. Right? Outside of selling real estate and doing what I do, I can't carry a note.
I don't know if you can sing or not.
Oh, I cannot.
You're a performer, though.
Well, I might be a performer,
but
I cannot.
You're definitely a performer.
You know how you always think
you
sound really good? Oh, yeah.
You think
you sound really good in the shower and you think you sound really good in the car. For some reason, in the car, I can sing Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You, or I could sing an Alan Jackson tune, and I'm right there with them. Like, I have such range.
Wow.
Well, one time I'm driving down
such
the road.
Such range.
Back in the day of the insurance company, we had dictaphones, and we had this thing called it was called a dictaphone, and we had cassette recorders that they had a cassette tape in. I know. Amber's over here going, what is he talking about?
I don't know.
And I'll show you a picture at a magazine or something.
Is a dictaphone that thing magazine? That Lewis has in Suits? Where he records
Suits. My
himself.
Wife does, but I don't watch it.
Oh, you don't.
But anyway, so I could record. I thought, you know, I've got this dictaphone. I'm driving down the road. I got a couple hours. I'm gonna pop that thing in. I'm gonna sing a song. So I sang this song and I belted out, gave it everything I had. Took it out, put it into the car player, and played it. Oh my God, it was horrible. I mean, what I forgot to do was to erase the tape.
Oh, gosh.
So I'm back at the office a few weeks later, and my best friend worked at the insurance company with me, and he needed to take a recorded statement from a claimant. And he says, do you have a tape? Sure. Reached into my briefcase. I grabbed one out. He clicks play because he's backing, and then there's me belting out whatever song it was.
Oh, my gosh.
That's exactly my reaction. I jumped up, ran over there. I grabbed his – we're both fighting over the dictaphone, and he's cracking it. We're both fighting it. I literally pull him – he's holding onto it so tight. I pull him out of his chair. We're both on the floor. People are looking like, what are you two doing? But oh, and let me tell you, I wrestled it away, grabbed that tape, and I grabbed a pair of scissors and ripped that thing apart, but I've never done that again. Ooh. Yeah, so this concept of auditioning and everything, man, that doesn't fly with me.
So Jeff's a bad singer.
Horrible. just horrible. And it's horrible. It's sad. It's so bad.
Well, one other thing I wanted to talk to you about. So I know One thing that's – I believe this is fully public at this point, but Karen Gailey is retiring. Uh-huh. Is that at the – that's at the end of this year. Is that correct?
Actually, I think it's going to be more like the middle of the year. I think
we're
looking somewhere around June, and I think she's going to do some consulting, and she's going to be available to come back. Actually, the convention will be in Overland Park, so I think she's going to be available to come back here for hopefully what will be a send-off and things. But I think she's actually going to be done around June sometime.
So the reason why I bring it up, I mean, certainly one of the ways that I've gotten to know you over the years is through, among other things, is through KAR. Uh-huh. You've been in leadership, not just at the local level, but at the state level.
Yes.
And as an NAR director as well, I believe. Tell us a little bit about one of the things that Bobby and I have recently talked about. I think you knew this. Judy Miller was somebody who basically forced me to call Kelly Curtis and get signed up for the event planning committee, which was a terrible committee for me to be on, but she made me do it.
And Judy was good about making people
started.
Do things. Yep.
Absolutely. But tablecloths and centerpieces are not my forte.
That's not my thing either.
It was not something that, and when I did give my opinion, I didn't feel like other people wanted to hear it. And I don't blame them.
Yeah.
Who wants to hear what I have to say about your centerpieces, you know? But I'm curious about, because I don't actually, I have a hunch I know the answer to this, but I'm curious about your leadership journey and who those people were for you that encouraged you to get started in association leadership.
Well, you know, Daryl Stiles was a big one. Rob Curtis, another one. Mm-hmm. So Rob, you know, we have all kinds of nicknames for him. We call him the Rob Father, you know, those kinds of things. But yeah, he was very, very encouraging of me. And Susan Bowers, another one. You know, I've had the great fortune to work with some really wonderful people along the way that have encouraged me. And then, you know, at the state level, John Green, who passed away a few years ago from Topeka, was a great mentor. And for different reasons, I was on my journey by the time I met John. But John was really good about keeping me in check. Mm. You know, younger guy back then coming in and, you know, John Green made me think and listen before I talked. Mm. And when I became president of the Kansas Association of Realtors, and John and I didn't get along real well. I mean, he popped me back in my seat several times. And every president gets to pick a couple of presidential appointees to serve on the executive committee. And typically, a lot of people pick people they want to have around them. They want somebody on their side, that kind of thing. They want those extra votes. And I picked John Green. And he was completely surprised when I asked him to do it. And I said, you know, John, I want to make sure I'm doing things the right way. And you're not afraid to tell me if I'm not, if I'm getting out of my lane or something like that. And so you would be doing me a great favor if you would serve with me this year. And he did. And I was always grateful to John for doing that, because he was just the type that I just always knew where I stood with John. And, you know, I could look over and I could either get a grin or I could get a, you know, a little side eye that, you know, I was maybe getting a little out of line. So I always appreciated the help that I got from him. But yeah, Rob Curtis, Daryl Stiles, Susan Bowers, you know, and I always hate to list names because I'm going to forget somebody.
Oh, I know.
You know, nowadays, you know, I look around the room and I hope that I'm encouraging to people
yourself. Yeah.
and other people. And you know, and it's kind of funny right now, you know, Michael Pierce was president, 2 years ago. Sydney was president last year, Sydney West. Cindy's president this year, and Andrew Mall is president next year. Well, they were all chairman of my committee.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of feeling a little bit like the kingmaker right now.
Man.
And so, you know,
it was, by the way, another one of Rob's nicknames.
The kingmaker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I, you know, it's like my kids are doing well. You know, that's kind of what you, that's kind of how
it.
You look
yeah.
at it.
Well, because that's because we did all go through there. I mean, I went through there. That's Kyle's been through there. I mean, let's be honest. I think that, and we haven't talked about advocacy really, but when you think about the value that most people, I think, will how do I say this? I think that if you ask the average realtor what the most important thing was that the association did, I think they'd all say MLS.
Oh, really?
And then after MLS, though, the next thing that they would say is advocacy.
If they understand what we do.
If they understand what they, and they have any respect for it, they're going to say advocacy. And I think that the majority of the volunteers come in feeling that way. They're going to get started, and I still feel like it's the most important thing that the association does. Is what I love the most, that's for sure. And you are a big part of instilling that. But I think that that's part of why I think people that are attracted to service want to go where the most important piece of things is.
That's
and
true.
I think advocacy is that's that entry point. And you encourage those people, you identify those people, you pull them into that committee, and it's always a powerhouse committee.
Well, it's true. And you know, you have to look around the table sometimes, and sometimes you see a spark. And maybe they're not the ones that are always talking or, you know, contributing, but they're taking it in. And sometimes you just, you know, you have to recognize that spark. And I think that's what Rob was really good at doing and some other folks. And that's what I hope that I'm trying to do is to see that spark and then encourage them to do more.
Absolutely.
There's so many people that want to do something. And it's funny in a business like ours with the egos we have and those – everybody needs a little encouragement. And sometimes they're in arenas that they're not as comfortable.
Yeah.
And they just need that little push. And
what do you attribute that to? Because you're right. I mean, we based on the general profile of people that are successful in this business, you'd think that they'd gravitate toward that without too much encouragement. Why do they need that encouragement?
That's a good question. I was the same way. I remember when I was nominated for treasurer, I think, secretary or treasurer. I'm trying to remember what role it was with the Johns County Board of Realtors before we emerged to form KCRR. And I was nominated, and then Susan Bowers was nominated. I thought, well, I'm not going to beat Susan Bowers. I mean, this is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And so we had to leave the room while they had a vote. The board of directors had a vote on it. And I'm out here, and I said, you know, thanks for just acknowledging me. You know, here I'm up against the juggernaut that is Susan Bowers. She goes, oh, honey, you don't get it. You're going to be the president or the treasurer or the secretary. We just have to have somebody. We have to have a race. So, you know, I was just a sacrificial lamb. You've got it. But it was one of those things where she said, it's your time. It's your time. You need to do this. You don't know that you're going to be good at it. But I know that you're going to be good at it.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know what, that's all you – really? You think so? And then all of a sudden I walk back in the room with a little bit – you know, I'm a little taller when I walk back into that room after her after her saying that.
I think too that when people come into leadership or into a committee for the first time, it is such a departure really from what we're used to in this business.
It is.
And so it can feel – initially like you're losing focus on your activities because you sure as hell aren't going to sell any of the people in that room a house.
Right, exactly.
Right? It's like everybody's like, especially when you're first getting started, is, you know, everybody's so focused on prospecting. Well,
right.
You know, oh my gosh, you know, it's a bad investment of your time if you're focused on prospecting probably. So you have to change your focus when you're in there and it can be a little disorienting for people. And I think that's why I needed that a little bit was I needed folks. After you know Judy got me pushed in there, I needed some people to you know pull me up and say, "No, it's okay to focus on this too." And
yeah.
You do have time; you can figure it out, and it helps.
Well, I think I'm a better realtor because of my involvement in the association.
Me too.
Again,
I feel the
relationship.
Way.
And that interacting with one another. I mean, I pick up things from you and from other folks that I take back to my business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I learn you know, sometimes we just need to know that we're all going through the same thing. And so I remember one time, and it was during a kind of a slow portion of the business. And boy, I just didn't have much going on. And I, my office was next to another agency, and I would run into a realtor out in the parking lot, and, you know, how are you doing? Oh my gosh, I'm making more money than I can spend. It's just, I'm going to close $3 million this month and this and that. And I'm like, really? You know, and but I'm thinking, boy, you're not going that way for me. Well, then I called a really good friend of mine, Mike Jacoby, and I said, hey, Mike, what are you doing? He goes, I'm sitting here playing solitaire on the computer. He goes, what else is there to do? And I said, so you're slow too? And he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, everybody is. And he said, I'll tell you, the phone rang and I jumped. It'd been so long since it rang, I forgot what it sounded like. I go, okay, well, I'm wondering if it was just me, because I ran into this person. Oh, you know, he's full of you know what. And mm-hmm. you know what? Check his production at the end of that. $3 million he said he closed in March. That's probably where it's going to be for the end of the year. You know, that kind of thing. And he's, you know, some people just have to walk around because they've read a book, they've heard a speaker, that whenever anybody asks you, everything's wonderful, the life is great, the business is great, and, you know, everything's just sunshine and rainbows. And he goes, so, but we need to hear from people that, like ourselves. I mean, I think those, Mike was always one I could go to and know I'd get the straight scoop. And, you know, when I get – it's like when I get those phone calls too. You know, first of all, yeah, that's what's going on right now. You got to keep doing what you're doing. I get a lot of phone calls, younger agents that are just – they're struggling,
yep.
that kind of thing. You know what? You got to keep focused on doing what you know that you need to be doing.
I love it. I mean – oh, and I think that being having people to encourage you through those kinds of moments is what everything's
all
about.
You need. So, yeah. Sometimes you just need somebody to listen. Yep. Sometimes you need somebody to cry with. And yep. then you know what? You need somebody just to kind of lift you back up. And that's a good thing to do. And it makes you feel good by doing it too.
There you go. All right. Rapid fire. You ready? I'm
going
to ask you some questions.
Okay. No, I'm not ready, but I guess I have to be.
All right. All right. Here we go. Are you a morning person or a night owl?
Night owl.
A night owl. When's your bedtime?
Midnight.
Midnight. What time do you get up?
Seven-ish.
Seven-ish?
That ish is a really long period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, do you say vertical or just awake? There's wake up time. There's, you know, feet touch the floor time.
All right. All right. Good. You like sweets or savory items?
You didn't have to give me the other one. Sweets.
It's all about sweets. Yeah.
It's terrible.
Favorite restaurant?
Oh.
Favorite restaurant ever. You've been we've gone to some good restaurants.
We have. You know, my Pittsburgh people are going to love this, but probably Jim's Steakhouse in Pittsburgh, Kansas.
Jim's Steakhouse in Pittsburgh.
Give me a chicken fried steak and some onion, some stringy onion rings, and I'm not going to leave the table till we're done.
All right, best barbecue in Kansas City.
You know what? I like Wyandotte barbecue.
Wyandotte barbecue.
Yeah, that sauce. Give me a deluxe beef crumbly and a fry.
I've never been to Wyandotte barbecue.
Well, we're going.
So my favorite barbecue is Elsie's.
Elsie's. Haven't had it.
Oh, it's so good.
Where's it at?
I couldn't tell you.
Can't tell me or you won't tell me?
Oh, I can't tell you exactly where it is. I'd have to look. I mean, I got to take Google Maps there every time.
Is it
time.
In Spring Hill or
no,
is it
it's in KC Mo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Elsie's.
Yeah.
I'll have to remember that.
It's good. The smoker's still it's just got a smoker behind the counter.
Uh-huh.
So you walk out just reeking of barbecue.
Oh, yeah. That's how Wyandotte barbecue is.
Oh,
no going there for lunch and then going home. Where you been? You been at Wyandotte Barbecue today?
Yeah.
No,
me. You're told.
Well,
yeah,
your lips
no
are
question.
Shiny and you smell like barbecue.
Yeah, but their sliced pork is like, it's the best thing ever eaten. And
right.
I'm serious.
All right.
And so,
well, you take me to Elsie's, I'll take you to Wyandotte.
All right. It's going to be great. Well, Jeff, this has been a treat.
Oh, same here.
I mean, I love Bobby, but the fact that she wasn't going to be here and I was going to be with you, that was going to be fun.
Same thing. Before you got here, I walked to the front desk to see if you'd come in yet, and I was already grinning. They're like, what are you grinning about? I get through the podcast today with Alex.